Welcome to Two Bards, One Mic. Insert interesting music here.
I swear we're actually going to get music one of these days.
Nah.
257.
257.
For some reason, I feel like it's, 44 more than that today. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it's okay.
And is it, though? How's it going, Scott?
Going pretty good. How about you, Andy?
Oh, not too bad. Let's see. I have already today gone to a secondhand store and found an amazing table for a vase. I'm a vase person now, I guess. Yeah, and also trudged through a hardware store thing to find herb seeds, because herbs are amazing.
Yes, they are.
And also I have kind of a fun thing for you to try.
Okay.
I think I mentioned it. Maybe I didn't mention it. I've been on and off Discord a lot. So the heels on the keto bread that we buy,
mm-hmm.
you know, that you buy as well, they're not super useful. They're very dry. You know, they are a little leathery at times. Would you agree?
I don't know about leathery. I like the heel because I can soak a whole lot more butter into it. But
okay, well that's a good point. Anyway, I made keto breadcrumbs out of them.
Oh,
and they work fantastic. For breadcrumbing, because like I said, they do feel drier than the rest of it. So
mm-hmm.
I used my little Cuisinart just food processor thingy. It sucks. I need to get something better. It's really not good. But so I ground all that up, added garlic and garlic powder, of course, because you want to keep everything as dry as possible, and mm-hmm. a bunch of Italian seasoning, a little tiny bit of salt, and then baked it at 350 degrees for like 20 minutes, stirring it as I went.
Mm-hmm.
They are perfect. They are perfect breadcrumbs. And you can add them to things like meatballs and have zero carb meatballs.
Nice.
Yeah. There, so it worked out super well.
Yeah.
The meatballs, by the way, A++. So I thought that would interest you a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Obviously, like, so it's breadcrumbs, the spices that I mentioned, a couple of eggs. The eggs are really important to meatball making in terms of like keeping moisture inside. Otherwise, they become like little rubbery meat nuggets of pain. So, but yeah, I was pretty pleased with that. So the ultimate test, of course, is to take the angel hair miracle noodles, a minimal carb marinara sauce, which you'd have to pretty much make yourself, and then these meatballs, and you could do yourself a really good little Italian meal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. So what have you been up to, Scott, in these 2 weeks?
not a lot. I'm looking at calendars to see what has been going on. There has been some theater. We went last night and saw Murder on the Orient Express out in North Bend. It's a new version written by Ken Ludwig, who is a very funny writer. Mm-hmm. Must have been his day off when he wrote this one.
Ouch.
And I can't tell if it's the script or the production.
Right.
Had a friend in the show, and she did great. But the show overall, meh. Little mixed feeling about that. Let's see. Valentine's Day was fine. President's Day was fine. I thought there was something else that I did. Just a second.
Well,
look at it.
You did do one thing last Sunday, because I was there.
Yes, the Jaws screening at Mr. Downing's 100-inch cinema with Mr. Lewis and Mr. Amundsen and Andy and I. And we were supposed to podcast, but I was already starting to not feel so well. And then that led to the rest of the week really not feeling so well. And then not yesterday. Yesterday was the show and a baby shower for said actress's daughter's baby. Daughter-in-law's baby. Mm-hmm. And then Friday, in celebration, kind of, sort of Tom Brophy's birthday, but more so for Jeff Permoy's birthday, since it was his 50th this year. So mine was a couple years ago, and then Jeff's was last year. We did Hawaii, and we're all feeling broke. So, you know, told Jeff what he wanted to do. He's like, nothing. We said, well, we can't have that. So then, as Jeff likes to say, Tom volunteered me to cook Jeff dinner. Which isn't much of a volunteering because I like to cook. So I said, hey, and we talked about this during football season. So it was pre-Super Bowl or Super Bowl. I can't remember which time it was. And I said, I have no problem doing this so long as I get, you know, your menu. You know, what do you want me to cook for you? He said, oh, yeah, let me think about it. So Monday last week, I said, hey, so is this the Friday that I'm cooking dinner for you where I don't have a menu yet? And to wit, I got, oh, just screw it. I don't want to do anything. And so I finally got food out of him. You wouldn't know it to look at him, but he is of Cuban descent. So I did a whole Cuban meal. So I made ropa vieja for the first time, which is a delicious meat dish, which should be pretty keto friendly. The tomato sauce is probably the only thing, or tomato paste is the only thing that's going to be bad in that, but that's not that bad given the quantity of everything else that goes in. So, I don't really worry about tomatoes. They're good for me. And then the other things, I did not make keto, because, I didn't have the time. A, B, I wasn't going to keep the food, so I wasn't going to make it keto for Jeff, who's not keto. So I made some guava paste puff pastries, which were quite good. And then I made a from-scratch baked guava cheesecake, which was pretty good. I will say I did not have much, but I can say that Jeff had two helpings at the house, and then the next day before 2 in the afternoon, he'd had 3 more helpings.
Oh, geez.
And stopped at a total of 4 that day. So I think I did okay on the cheesecake. Good news is I can make it keto friendly.
Ooh.
So I'm going to try that. I can't do it with the guava, but I can do like the cheesecake with cocoa nibs or something that would be 100% keto. I also did make mofongo for the first time, which is basically fried green plantain bananas that are then mashed up. So plantains are versatile. If you let them go to, you know, ripen, the yellowy getting into brown, the sugars come through and they get all sweet. And then you can fry those and, you know, make plantain chips or something. But with the green ones, it's very hard to get the peel off.
And you almost have to, like, whittle them.
Yeah. And so I ended up making the discs I wanted and then just basically breaking my thumbnail trying to, you know, peeled these little amounts of the peel off. So that worked out really well, but it's just that. And traditionally, it would have been fried in lard. I used good oils. but then just mash it up with some garlic and some salt, and that's it. I guess traditionally you also put chicharrones in, but mm-hmm. most people don't like that. So, but yeah, had a really good meal. Forgot to take pictures of the dinner, of course, because I'm an idiot. There is a picture or two out there on the Facebooks. I think I've been tagged in them that have pictures of the cheesecake. That's about it. Getting ready for starting Terms of Endearment rehearsals in 2 weeks-ish. That's about it. Well, how about cool. you, Andy? I've talked enough for a while.
Let's see. So, yeah, Sunday we did the Jaws thing. As always, every time I watch that movie, I am just as amazed as the first time I watched it. That's not a joke or even hyperbole. That's absolutely true. I am in awe of the filmmaking of Jaws to this day. So that was a lot of fun. Brian, having never seen it, was interesting because, you know, I saw it when the shark was still a pretty okay effect. You know, it wasn't, it was never great. It was never amazing, but it was a pretty okay effect when, you know, in the, like all the way, I'd say through the early 90s, it was a pretty okay effect.
Yeah.
It is definitely in the world of photorealistic computer generated graphics, a little, you can see the seams, you know, the rubber flapping over the side of the mouth and stuff like that. Brian, having never seen it, of course, didn't grow up with that effect and didn't grow up with like the childhood wonder of seeing, you know, wonder is a bad word. It was fear, pure fear of seeing that fucking thing on the screen. So, you know, it did sort of take Brian out, which was very sad, because I think being able to watch the movie without having that sort of disassociative experience of just getting hit by that costume in your eyes, or a costume, appliance, I guess. It was a giant metal rigging piece with foam rubber all over it. So I do think it was a little bit underwhelming maybe for Brian. If he's listening, I'd love to hear what you actually have to say about it. We didn't have a lot of time afterward. Everybody had to sort of jet. So, it was still, you know, it's always great to watch that movie. Additionally, let's see. So, I've been helping my cousin out with some stuff for his AirD&D experience. Nothing fun is going on yet, but I'll keep everybody posted on that. They just did a re-release or a new run, basically, via Limited Run Games of Monkey Island on Sega CD. So I grabbed that. Pretty excited. That's a very... If you've listened to the podcast, you know that point-and-click adventures are my favorite type of game, hands down. And LucasArts/Lucasfilm point-and-click adventures are the top of the list. Monkey Island, I guess... I mean, if you're going to say the grand parent of point-and-click adventures, you have to go to Roberta Williams, who did the King's Quest series, really. King's Quest started as a type and watch, I guess. It's not a text adventure. It's a text adventure with graphics. So you still typed your commands, like, you know, get key or whatever, but you actually saw what was going on. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of Roberta Williams and the Sierra thing. I didn't get into those. I got into Maniac Mansion. I got into games where you couldn't really die the same way you did in Sierra games. Maniac Mansion allowed you to die. And after that, I don't think, apart from some very specific things you can do, you don't die in LucasArts adventures. So that was quite a bit of, you know, that was much more my speed. I enjoy listening to the humor and listening to the writing and, or reading the writing, listening to the voices when they did do voices and stuff like that. So Monkey Island's a huge deal. Sega CD had the best. So Monkey Island was one of those games, the secret of Monkey Island, if we're going full ham on the name. The Secret of Monkey Island was one of those games that was released everywhere. It was released on the Commodore 64. It was released on the Atari ST. It was released on monochrome monochrome CGA, so the old green and amber, or green or amber and black CGA monitors. They had a version for that. They had CGA, EGA. There was a, so for a long time, EGA was the highest color count you could get on PC, and Amiga had VGA. So Amiga was the place to play this game, right? It was just amazing on Amiga. Amiga also had a bunch of helper chips for audio. They were, you know, really good at synthesizing. They did FM synthesis along with a number of different square wave type synthesis. So Amiga had a great soundtrack. But then PC finally eventually got the CD VGA version. So it was all voiced. Dominic Aramanto, I think is his name, voices Guybrush Threepwood. But it's got, I mean, it's got people like Rob Paulsen in it who plays just bit parts. You know, it's a great voiced game. So that's the best way to play it, is PC CD version. But Sega CD doesn't have all the colors. It's better than EGA, but it doesn't have all the colors of like a VGA release. However, it does have all the sound. So really excited to be playing that. Like, actually super stoked to be playing that.
Nice.
Yeah. So that should be a lot of fun. Maybe I'll stream it. Yeah, other than that, I went and played, so Ian Hubert, recently started his Patreon, and we went over, Michael's been helping him a little bit, but, to celebrate, we went over and did pizza and played, Xbox on LAN. So we played Halo. Well, we played Halo for a little while until we realized that basically only Michael knows how to play Halo. he just stomped everybody else. He destroyed everyone. So we were playing, I think we did two Xboxes with four players, so single split screen, which is, it's not fun to play on split screen anymore when you're used to having a huge monitor and stuff. It was still, I take that back. It was a lot of fun. It's just not as conducive to playing well.
Mm-hmm.
That was great though. We played, you know, Jet Set Radio Future. We played, Crash Nitro Racing and all sorts of stuff on a couple of original Xboxes over LAN, like real legit over LAN.
Nice.
Real hardware. Tons of fun.
Cool.
Yeah. And then we got to see Ian's lot mate, I guess. They're in different buildings, but they live on the same property. Showed us his tiny home apartment, which was really cool. He's got like a sort of, you know, Corbin Dallas Auto Wash bed that comes out of out from under a stand, so it's very space saving and stuff like that. Really cool little setup. You know, and of course that got a bunch of ideas going, so that's kind of what we did that wasn't work related. Work has been fucking hellish, by the way. It has been, I've been working very late. I've been working, I chose to not log in at all yesterday, but I almost did, and I probably shouldn't. I probably should keep the weekends to myself, but yeah, work has been something else, man. Obviously, because every year I agree to do it, I will be at ECCC this year. However, this is assuming ECCC still happens, considering Washington is a hot spot for coronavirus. We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think they should cancel it. It is, who has ever made it out of a con not getting a little sick? You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So that's not great, but, that's about all I had going on. I mean, apart from, you know, little rumblings here and there about Journey Quest season 4. I still don't know if my cameras are going to be used or not. I've been in contact with their camera person though, and he's really nice, so that's cool. But I still don't even know if they want to rent the cameras. They don't have enough budget to buy them, which is really what Zoe should do at this point. Zoe should buy an Ursa G2. I think that would do them really well.
Yeah, I can't believe that they don't have the ability to buy them.
Well, the issue is, the issue is they have to do production based on like the Patreon income. So the streaming and stuff like that, like it's just never quite enough to pull the trigger on the camera. I think. I like I'm just this they, speculation. They could I don't know for sure.
Buy it with the JQ money.
Yeah, they the JQ money spent elsewhere apparently. But you know, that's the thing. Like what if they rent it, right? If they rent it from me, it's gonna be like $3,000.
Right.
And if they're renting it for $3,000, find another $3,000 and just buy one, you know?
Right. That's what I mean. Put it in the fucking budget from jump and stop mincing about.
But hey, not my circus, not my monkeys when it comes to that stuff. That being said, I would like to know when my camera gear is going out, if it is. But I also, I've been talking to the DP and I think they can match anything. So if they want to rent a Red, cause I know they like renting the bigger name cameras, go for it. I will say this though, and it's really sad that it didn't get funded, but, Ren, the girl with the Mark, the show that they've been pushing for the last couple of weeks.
Mm.
So it's filmed in England, and they did an ask for the equivalent of about $135,000 or $140,000 US.
Mm-hmm.
So like 90 or 100,000 pounds. That show looks fucking amazing. And that's all shot on the Blackmagic production 4K that we used to shoot on.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can do some cool stuff with cheap cameras.
Yeah, you can.
Ren looked incredible. I'm really sad that it didn't get another season. I did back it. But unfortunately, it just didn't even... I don't even think it made half... I don't even think it made it halfway, which is really sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, I'm trying to think of anything else that like is really pressing, because I know I had some stuff that I wanted to talk about, but I don't know. I think like we've either already talked about it offline or whatever, but that's my weeks. So
yeah.
Let's get to some questions. We did ask you guys a question 2 weeks ago, you folks, about how did you feel about this year's Oscars? And we asked that question before the Oscars aired. We were thinking ahead. Then we didn't answer it for a week. So let's start with that. I will say that my view on the Oscars was it was fine. It was fine. I don't really like watching the Oscars. I haven't liked watching the Oscars in over a decade, honestly. It's a bunch of rich people acting kind of silly and getting a bunch of sponsored shit while talking about movies. Yay. And then like Ricky Gervais, I could give two shits about Ricky Gervais and his opinions. Honestly, I don't care. If I wanted to hear Ricky Gervais's opinions, I would follow him on Twitter.
He's the Golden Globes.
Whatever. That's right. It was,
Nobody.
Nobody. But last year it was Tina Fey, right? And Amy Poehler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I watched that. I watched some of their outtakes. They were not outtakes, but I watched some of those specific scenes, and they were fine. Again, it's so sanitized, right? If anybody says anything that actually has any meaning, they get shuffled off stage or played off, you know? Joaquin Phoenix did a great job trying to get a message out, but also to the people who watch the Oscars, so it doesn't do anything. You know what I mean? It's just such a giant circle jerk to me. Here's the thing. I don't plan or do any watch parties or anything like that. So if I'm watching the Oscars, it would be alone. That is an important thing to say, because I think that'd be like watching the Super Bowl alone. Like, I would ever fucking do that. I would not care at all to watch the Super Bowl alone. But if, you know, if there's a Super Bowl party and I happen to be there or whatever, that can be a fun experience. Just watching the Oscars is not fun to me. I'd rather just do something else and get the Twitter updates.
Gotcha. And I like watching the Oscars and try to make time to do that. Haven't been able to in the past couple years, because either A, in a show, or something was going on, or there's no streaming app. But this year, was able to get the app on whatever station it was on. Mm-hmm. and I like them. I find it to be a celebration of the thing I like to do. And while it may not have the same teeth that it used to, and it may be more political, and it may be about past performances than what you're actually getting at this point, it's still a litmus test of what's going on. And there's the year in memoriam that I always like to pay
they
homage
keep
to those
skipping
that...
people though. They keep skipping really important people, you know, like what's that dude's name, Haig, who he's often in like stuff from Rob Zombie, but I think it's something Haig. Let's see. House of a Thousand Corpses. Let's see. It is Sid Haig. So Sid Haig died. He didn't get shit. You know, a couple of people didn't get shit on the memoriam. And I'm not saying like that should take away from the people who did get honored. I agree. That is an important honor to talk about, especially when they show background cast who, you know, a face you've seen 300 times. But they've always been like this background character actor or something. Those are always really, to me, very important to see, because those people do fill out so much in, you know, in Hollywood film in terms of like making them grounded and human by being there, and they get no real recognition. So, you know, when that stuff happens, that's great, but they do keep missing a lot of really great performers who die, because I just don't think Hollywood likes, this is a funny year to say this, by the way, but I don't think Hollywood likes horror. So a lot of horror people get left out. Mm-hmm. That being said, this year Hollywood pretty much liked horror, so. Or black comedy, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
All right, so let's actually get to your answers. Sorry about that. Rob McLennan writes, I typically don't feel about the Oscars apart from, did anyone actually watch that? So Rob and I are very similar.
Casey Lee says, I only watch clips from award shows that call them out for what they are, like the biting satire of Ricky Gervais, Neil Patrick Harris, etc. I see the shows as the industry indulging in hours of public narcissism. You people are all fucked up.
The Ricky Gervais thing, so Neil Patrick Harris's call out was good. That was actually like a problem in Hollywood. Ricky Gervais literally said, don't do what I'm doing literally right now. And then did the thing he said, don't do. I think that I like Ricky Gervais. I like a lot of his shows. I like a lot. Like, I think that Derek might be one of the best shows focusing on not necessarily autism, because they don't specifically come out and say it. But, you know, it focuses on that sort of social disability and things like that. It's an amazing show. It's heartwarming at the same time. It's heart wrenching. But to get up and make a political statement about how people shouldn't be making political statements is pretty stupid. So, nah. Rival Guy writes, they've been used in some circles to try to raise awareness around ranked choice voting, just like this comment. Hopefully that's a good thing. I agree. Ranked choice voting's awesome.
Brad McGowan says, I haven't watched the Oscars in years, but it's more of my taste in entertainment than the show itself. Movies are edited so critically in post-production now that they're perfect. I like slight mistakes. I like the slip of the fourth wall, and I like a flubbed line. It's real and human and natural. For example, one of Scott's scenes, oh great, in Hands of Fate, he blows the dust off his R9E card collection. It's campy, staged, and takes you out of the scene. But he follows up with a beautiful diatribe about his card collection. Scott delivered his lines perfectly and has tugged at my heartstrings. I really felt his love for the game. It was real and human. I guess it may be a bit odd, but I find imperfection perfect. The Oscars celebrate perfection, but in a political campaign form, and it feels inhuman. Awarding performers for how well they could be produced post-shoot. The performances are perfect, but they feel unnatural. It should be an award show for the editors who make their performances perfect. I guess that was a long road to say I like independent movies over movies considered Oscar material. Scott, Please don't take my critique as a slight. You are one of my favorite actors ever. Thank you, Brad. I don't take it as a slight.
Oh, I would like to ask that you do.
Well,
just do it.
Okay. For Andy, I'll take it as a slight, but Brad, I'm not.
Yes.
I kind of hear what you say, and I strongly urge you to go watch live theater.
Well, that's a good. That's
where you see those things. You shouldn't see anything that's. I mean, I understand the overly polished aspect of some movies, but I guarantee you there are plenty of flubs, booms in shots, bogeys in the background, Tony Becerra's hanging out in a shot that no one, including Tony, bothers to notice, and it actually goes in the can. But I guess I understand in what you're talking about with me blowing off the cards. It's campy and staged, and it was scripted. It was exactly what was supposed to be in there. So,
well, minus the we were supposed to add like a dust effect in post. But other than that,
yeah,
we didn't.
Which didn't happen. But I didn't edit that one. So, correct. You know, it's campy and staged because that's the way that it's written. And other things aren't written that way. So right. I think farther down where you say independent movies are what you like more because they are a bit campier. They are not full of themselves. They do take the piss out of things. I would say like Simon Pegg films. You know, they kind of... Mm-hmm. turn things on their ear with Shaun of the Dead or Hot Fuzz or things of that nature. All that being said, thank you for being moved by one of my favorite speeches ever that they didn't let Brian and I have our moment on.
Oh, yeah.
But we do have a take somewhere where Brian and I really pull on heartstrings and really go there.
That's awesome.
And we begged for that take, but didn't get used. Wanted the funny, not the serious.
Well, yeah. I mean, remember the music that went over it? The xylophone-y?
Yeah.
Boop, boop. Yeah, so what are you going to do? Brad, I will say this. That is, and don't take this as a slight because it's not. That is a very, I would say, astute layperson sort of perspective on this. All we see are imperfections. Scott and I can sit down and watch a perfect movie and pick out 100 imperfections, right? They don't get rid of all the imperfections, but what is more common these days is they use editing to knock the corners off of them so they're a little smoother, you know?
Yeah.
They're still not 100% perfect. You're going to find booms in big budget movies. You're going to find continuity errors all over the place. Every large movie that went out has mistakes in it. Even the Avengers, something that had what $300 billion thrown at it, has got mistakes in it. Or $300 million, sorry, not $300 billion. That would be a
that would be one a hell of a movie.
But $300 million, you know, like it's got some, you know, big mistakes in it too. There are Jurassic Park. Let's just bring this up. Has a missing frame of animation in the finished theatrical release. When the T-Rex picks up the Velociraptor inside, by the way, spoiler for Jurassic Park from 1994, when the T-Rex breaks into the atrium of the visitor center and takes out the Velociraptor, apart from being stupid because how the fuck did a T-Rex sneak into the visitor center? Let's forget that. There's a frame where the Velociraptor just disappears right out of the T-Rex's mouth, just right out of her mouth. Just the Velociraptor's gone. So, that's a finished fucking movie that millions of dollars were spent on the VFX for. Let me put my spin on what you said, Brad. a good example of something that pissed me off to no end, or it didn't piss me off. It just made me not care about the movie as much. Jurassic World, when you're flying into Ilsa, who gives a shit, right? They CG'd the entire ocean. The entire ocean was not pretty enough for them. So they made CG waves and blue, you know, crests and stuff like this. That stuff takes me right out because it looks like a cartoon. It looks like a matte painting over the ocean, except for it's moving, you know? So that to me is like the striving for perfection over realism that takes you, you know, that like ungrounds a movie. But, you know, like Parasite is amazing. There are some amazing movies out there this year. And then some of the movies that showed up are almost like, I don't know, they've got a more independent feel to them. They're made by people who've only made a couple of other movies or who've only done independent filmmaking in the past. So I don't think it's so much that for me. And what does bother me, though, is the heavy lifters in filmmaking are the ones who don't get airtime. You know, they're the ones who get their awards during the commercial break. And I think Scott's talked about this before, that he says that if you get an award at the Oscars, you should get an award at the Oscars. Like, it should be on TV. You should go up. You should accept it. And you should get your, you know, your 2 minutes, just like everyone else.
Yep.
And that's the part that bothers me. The Oscars are just like the Super Bowl, right? They're about the ads. So when the Oscars are telecast, they hold the live show for ads, you know, stuff that Scott's already talked about hating in sports. So they, you know, they'll do that stuff. And then instead of giving these stunt persons or VFX artists or whatever their time in the sun to actually go up and accept an award that everyone else sees, they cut those out because, you know, the telecast is for the people who don't make movies. The telecast is for people who watch movies and want to see the actor and the director, and that's it. You know, they want to see the actors. They want to see that maybe the best, you know, they want to see Best Picture because people watch the Oscars to see Best Picture to feel like part of a team. The Best Picture award is essentially Super Bowl for movies. You know, it's like, did my movie win? But everything else, you know, people watch to see the things that they see in the movie. I think musical score is one of the ones that's like right on the edge, where if you put musical score during a commercial break, I think people would still complain, like lay people would still complain. But, you know, that's about the bottom of the barrel for what the average viewer cares about. So, you know, that's my issue. Like I think you bring up a good point that editors and things like that are very heavy lifters in making things look good. That being said, I will not in any way say that's there. Okay. There is no way that you can tell Joaquin Phoenix this year that he doesn't deserve his best actor, his best actor award, because the editor did all the work for him. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. He did all that work. Everybody that was up for best actor did all that work. Everybody that was up for best actress, best supporting, they all did that work. So I don't think we're rewarding the behind the scenes to make an actor look good. You know, I would disagree with that part. But on the same token, I do understand what you're saying, where Hollywood strives for perfection to the point where they'll send something through a pipeline 20 times before they like it. Whereas in the old days, you can only do it once because your negative would be cut to shit after that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think I have a question, unless you have one. I think I have a question for next week.
I don't.
Okay, cool. Well, for next week, Bard Couturiers, I was talking earlier about the re-release of Monkey Island on physical media for Sega CD. What thing, it could be a movie or it could be a game, it could be anything. It could be food. It could be a board game. What thing do you want to see brought back? Like what, maybe it's Surge. Maybe it's Surge is back. I'm sorry. Maybe it's Jolt Cola. Maybe it's, I don't know, Pet Rocks or Mood Rings, you know? But what thing would you like to see brought back, if even for a limited time today, what would just warm your heart? Do you have anything like that, Scott?
12-inch G.I. Joes.
dude, you can still find those. You just got to go to the right bars.
Yeah.
For me, I think it would be, as silly as this sounds, I want Ecto Cooler. I just want to have another one. I would love to try another Ecto Cooler before I die.
Crystal Pepsi.
That was back for a while, and it was fantastic.
Hmm.
I forgot how good it was, because it doesn't have the, like, the caramel color in it, which does have a mild burnt flavor to it.
Mm.
So it changes the flavor profile quite a bit for Crystal Pepsi. But I really, yeah, that was great. That came back, I think, in 2015 or something like that.
For
a little bit. Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right. Well, let's. That's enough of us pestering you. Now it's time for you guys to pester us. James Peters says, or no, wait, sorry, Matt Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Matt Hunt says, sorry, you guys both have very similar. No, James is James now. He actually uses his real name on Discord now, so I should remember that. So Matthew Hunt says, thoughts on the 92nd Academy Awards and the 40th Golden Raspberry Awards? I don't watch the Golden Raspberries either. I think the Golden Raspberries are pretty disrespectful. I didn't
know you could watch them.
They stream them, I think. Like YouTube streaming or something, I think. I do love it when actors go and pick up their Razzies. Halle Berry, I think, was amazing when she picked up hers. It was actually a really heartfelt speech, you know? People got to pay their fucking bills, so I don't care much for the Razzies because the Razzies are pointing the finger at the person doing their job, not at the idiot who greenlit this shit, instead of greenlighting something better.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who should win Razzies are producers, not actors, not DPs. The people who win Razzies should be producers.
Yes, and you can turn around and make it the idiot who allowed Halle Berry to do this role and look like shit through no fault of her own is...
Yep. There you go. There you go. Exactly. Because, okay, seriously, I don't think a day goes... Or I don't think a month goes by where a movie isn't announced that is funded at $40 or more million that we could turn into something amazing. And it's just utter shit. It's just crap.
Yeah.
You know? I'm trying to think. There was one very recently. I might have to look through my old posts for it. But there was a movie recently that I was thinking about. And it just royally pissed me off because it was a take on a premise that I came up with Tyler Hill. And, you know, obviously... first to market wins, period. So I'm fine with that, you know, but it was done very poorly. Well, I mean, we've already talked about the fact that Living With Myself is a premise that I'd worked on, quite a bit, back in like the 2012, 2013 timeframe.
Mm-hmm.
But mine was much darker and, you know, so they pulled the premise. Now anything we did would be copying that premise. You know, it just would be. So stuff like that, is fine though. But when you see something that was an idea you had and it was a really good idea and they do it in the worst, lowest hanging fruit way possible.
Yeah.
It drives you nuts. It just drives you nuts.
Yeah. And my thoughts were already stated on the Academy Awards and,
I think we already covered that. The Razzies are the one I really want to
know about. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have heard of them before, and my general thought is that they're giving the award to the wrong person.
Exactly.
But they need to call out what it is so that instead of putting down Halle Berry, you lift up Halle Berry, recognizing that she is not that you're seeing. Someone allowed that to happen.
And yeah, well, like
they
Sandra Bullock.
Get that award.
Yeah, Sandra Bullock did something similar where, you know, I think she accepted her award as well and gave a really good speech about it and stuff like that. So the Razzies, I mean,
when they're fun, it's okay.
When they've turned into troll
awards now.
Well, especially the comment section on them. It's like fucking armchair producers who fucking don't understand anything about making a movie, and you know, then you get a bunch of the Razzies are also a big channel for things like sexism and racism, because they love to do that rather than celebrating stuff they like. They love to celebrate stuff they don't in a public way. So, but yeah, I think they're always focusing on the wrong person.
Yeah. Sorry. That's my turn. Rival Guys asks, people talk a lot about millennials and AI destroying jobs and industries. What industries do you think they should team up to destroy?
So many. I mean, destroy fossil fuels. Get them the fuck out of here. Get them. Gone. Get them out. Goodbye. Fucking, how about payday loans? How about, you know, destroy the fuck out of those. Get them out of here. Though, oh, you heard about that whole payday loan thing, right, Scott?
I don't know.
Patreon's going to start doing payday loans.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
What the fuck? But I mean, there's a bunch of stuff out there that could do with an AI/millennial gutting. Personally, I feel like golf courses could. I think golf courses need to be, like, it's so much wasted land that could be forest or farm or housing. Golf courses drive me nuts. Plus, they are also the biggest overconsumer of water in arid places. So, like, Arizona golf courses are fucking terrible.
Mm-hmm.
They import California drinking water to water their greens. I mean, I've got so many I could go forever. But how about you, Scott? What have you got that we should destroy with AI or millennials?
I don't really have anything.
Shit'll destroy itself, basically. There's just no getting around that. It's not millennials. It's that, you know, it's that tastes change. It has nothing to do with any, like, how many people do you see going around buying poodle skirts today? Seriously. Like, oh, did boomers destroy poodle skirts? Or did Gen Xers destroy poodle skirts? No. Tastes change. Applebee's would have gone out of business if no new generations had been born and we just invented, you know, immortality. Applebee's would have gone out of business. Let's be completely honest about that. And as far as AI, bring it on. Bring it on. AI destroying jobs is a capitalist mindset. AI freeing us from mundane work is the way it should be looked at. But, you know,
yeah,
that would require actually understanding that people are a benefit and, you know, doing something along the lines of a UBI or something along those, you know. But I mean, to me, saying AI is destroying a job is like saying that, you know, mine carts put a bunch of kids out of work in the early 1900s, you know, like that's good, right? That's a good thing.
Yeah, I think AI should destroy negativity.
Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it? Well, it's okay. It's just got to, like, subtract enough until it rolls back to positive. That's how AI looks at that. Yeah. sorry. Rob McLennan writes, Valentine's Day. I already hate this question. Celebration of romance, corporate gouge, or gothic festival execution? Kind of all of it. You know what? There's something millennials are destroying. Stupid millennials, and they're actually being in good relationships all year round. What idiots. I think that's a huge sort of millennial, like Xennial, millennial, and whatever they decided to call it. Have they settled on a Gen Y name yet?
Or no.
Not Gen Y, Gen Z or whatever. They haven't settled on one yet?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. Anyway, because they'll be the next people destroying everything, right? So basically, Xennials and down all decided that staying in bad relationships is stupid. So Valentine's Day means less because it's not the one day a year you are actually kind to each other. It's just another day. And the day after is Cheap Candy Day. And that is a much bigger deal to most people these days, is Cheap Candy Day.
That is true.
That being said, Gothic Festival. Oh, and Corporate Gouge. That's not the day. That's any day. Anything you can. Why do they have car sales on President's Day? What the fuck line is that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't. But people are off work. Well, not anymore, you know, for one. I mean, all those mail delivery people out looking for a car, sure. But, you know, most of us work President's Day these days. So I think that's where it started, though, right? Is it's a day everyone had off work, and it's a day people are starting to get their tax returns back.
Probably.
Like, for some people. So, but like, yeah, corporate gouging, right? Corporate gouging. Oh, President's Day. Let's fucking turn that into a thing, you know? That's all it is. Anytime people buy something for a holiday, it's a boost to an industry. So you're always going to get corporate gouging. I can't really fault the holiday for that any more than I can fault Halloween for, you know, Mars or Cadbury being, well, not in America, but, you know, like, you can't fault the corporate greed for ruining the holiday or anything like that. Just observe it how you want. For Valentine's Day, though, I think the big thing that's sort of killing it is, well, there are two big things, right? Valentine's Day was always a holiday for young lovers and kids in grade school. Those were the two big Valentine's Day markets, right? Kids in grade school would buy chalky, shitty candy and give it to each other and buy those flimsy ass cards and give those to each other and all that stuff. And then you have your young lovers buying things like very shitty jewelry on Valentine's Day and going out to a steak dinner or whatever, that kind of thing. Now that we're actually teaching things like consent in school, Valentine's Day is a much different day in school, right? You don't just give unsolicited Valentines to people anymore because it's weird and it puts kids in a weird position. So, you know, who's the holiday even for, really? Like, is it, I guess, I don't know. Like, I guess restaurants. it's for going out to a nice meal because you don't have the money to do it any other time of the year. There we go. There's the new marketing push for Valentine's Day. The one night a year you get to go to a fancy dinner because you're in so much student debt that you can't fucking breathe.
Wow, you guys are jaded.
I'm not jaded, though. I don't have.
Yeah, everything is so negative and doom and gloom. Valentine's Day is one day a year that you can just look at someone and say, I love you. Give them a card, give them a flower, give them whatever.
I literally do that every day of the year, though.
No, nobody does that every day of the year.
Oh, okay.
There should be a day to just celebrate love and.
Okay, wait. Hold up, because that's different. Okay, I like that idea a lot. Not celebrating a specific person, not celebrating romantic love necessarily, a day to celebrate love.
That's just what Valentine's love. Day is. I
That's
love you.
That's not how it's packaged. That's not how it's packaged,
sure,
though.
It is.
That's
chocolates. Chocolates aren't romantic. Aren't romantic love.
You
flowers
shut
aren't
your
romantic
mouth.
Love.
Chocolates are romantic love. You shut your mouth. My fat ass loves chocolate. Loves it. I would take a bullet for chocolate.
But that's not romantic love. That's just love.
You've never watched me eat chocolate, apparently.
That's lust.
Oh, right. Right. Okay, there you go. Everybody should get an oxytocin injection on Valentine's Day. Oh, that's a good thing. That's actually a good thing Valentine's Day does. Valentine's Day episodes of shit. Those are fun.
Mm-hmm.
They're always so stupid and weird. I don't think anybody remembers the massacre though at all, like in a meaningful way. So St. Valentine's Day, because St. Valentine's Day is not about his death, right? You're supposed to celebrate saints by celebrating their lives, not their deaths. So it is a fun jibe to make. About the massacre thing, but you know, that's never been the spirit. St. Patrick's Day is not about how St. Patrick died. It's about, I mean, I guess it's about persecuting Protestants, right? Because there were no snakes in Ireland. It's about chasing out people who you're labeling as snakes historically. Yeah, and we've done a pretty good job of just turning that into getting shitty day. So
mm-hmm.
why hang on to St. Valentine's?
See, that's the same thing. I will drink scotch and whiskey all year long, but I need
but
the
day
one day
devoted.
To celebrate the fact that I'm drinking. So Valentine's Day is the day to celebrate the fact that I love someone or something. I mean,
and also whiskey.
My Harley gets a Valentine's. I love that thing.
You joker. Happy Valentine's Day. Oh, did you get a chance to watch any of those yet?
Which?
The Harley Quinn
No, I have. I have not.
Oh, I am going to keep crowing about this because it is so good. It is so good. And Alan Tudyk is the best Joker, I think, now. I would absolutely cast him live action as Joker. As more of your, like, 90s animated series style Joker.
Mm-hmm.
100%. Well, Alan Tudyk, I'd cast him as anything. I'd cast Alan Tudyk as Anne of Green Gables, man. I would do that. He'd look cute in pigtails.
Am I the next one?
I don't remember. I'll read it. Casey Lee writes, what bard would you say is the better dancer, Scott? And would you be willing to have a dance-off to settle it? No. Note, I would assume Scotch would be involved. Maybe. I don't dance.
Neither of us dance. I have taken dance in college, but that doesn't mean anything.
Well, it does. You've got a leg up, no pun intended. Plus, I do believe we've heard stories of kilt dancing before. Yeah.
Well,
so
kilt cage dancing.
Kilt cage dancing. So, hey. I think you're thinking of two people who have rhythm, Casey. Like, or any kind of skill at all. That's not me. I'm not going to lie. No, I'm not going to win a dance off.
And I would assume Scotch would be involved on one side, but
vodka
not both,
on the other.
Because unfortunately, yeah. Andy does not share my love of Scotch.
It's the bitter, man. It's the weird flavors. It's too much. It's too much. It's too complex for my palate. It makes my brain hurt.
So it would be like Akita White Russian versus Scotch.
Yeah. Oh, that. Okay, I'm in. And the plan is keep drinking until we're too drunk to dance and just, you know, because the next day we'll be like, oh, we danced, right? Yeah,
right.
Yeah, we
exactly.
Danced. Yep. And I do believe Brad commented on this about Andy being, no. Not even close. I guarantee Scott has had more training dancing. Scott has done more with blocking and probably has a way better understanding of his sort of personal area and how he interacts with things around him and just has more sort of like personal awareness in those types of situations just from being in live theater and stuff like that. I am 99.9% sure Scott would win that.
I will tell you who the best dancer is. Brian Bender.
Oh, that is a good point.
When Brian
does ballet, didn't he?
No. No, I took ballet for 4 years. No, he has a... I can only describe it as a uniquely Brian pop and lock-esque style of... flow. If you could take flow and pop and lock and combine them, that is Mr. Brian Bender. And he,
it's impressive.
It is, you know, and I'm assuming when you say who's a better dancer, you're meaning not ballet, tap, jazz. You just mean getting out on the dance floor and doing your signature, whatever it happens to be. And I'm pretty sure both Andy's and mine would remind someone of an epileptic seizure. And Brian's is definitely something that once seen, A, can't be unseen. B, you're not upset that you can't unsee it. And C, you just want to see more of it. So those three things being what they are, I would say hands down that Mr. Brian Bender is.
Out of the two of us, Brian Bender is the best dancer.
Yep.
That is 100% correct.
Yep. Let's see. And finally, getting back to Valentine's Day, don't you guys think of anything else? Dougie Sharp says, do anything for Valentine's Day? It's hard to beat the discount on candy the following days.
Well, they don't discount keto candy. We found that out.
No. It's hard to find. But I did find... Reese's Peanut Butter Cup sugar free.
Go ahead and tell your story first.
Because
I found them too.
At my local grocery outlet and bought a bag and I was like, oh, we'll see how these taste. And they were very good. So I went back and bought all the rest of them and put them in a big plastic tub. and still have some. I'm trying not to eat them five at a time, but they are kind of small. And then I found them on Amazon for some stupid price.
Stupid bad?
Yes.
Yeah.
So now I just want to scour all
the
grocery outlets and find all
there's
the...
There's one by my place. There's one by my place. So I also found the Reese's sugar-free candies.
Mm-hmm.
And their sugar alcohol, whatever it is the most laxative of all the sugar alcohols by a lot.
I have that effect.
Wow, I did. Oh, boy. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like a situation where I'm Jeff Danielsing or anything like that, but I got the gurgle guts so bad. So bad. I think I only had like four of them too, because they're tiny. They're like the little bite size ones.
Yeah.
And I had like four of them, and it sounded terrible. Just terrible in my guts.
Hmm.
Like it was very, and it didn't feel good either, because everything was moving around, and like you'd get that bubble that would like go up to like the right side of your chest, and it feels like you're having a heart attack a little bit, because like that muscle starts tensing up or whatever. Or maybe I'm allergic to something in them now that I think about it. It was bad. It was so bad. But yeah, I've got a gross out by my house, so maybe I'll go check it out, and if they have some, I'll grab them and put them away for you.
That'd be great. I will pay you back for those.
Awesome.
As for doing anything,
oh yeah, I didn't do anything.
We opted. What did we do? We were gonna do something, and then we said no, and I think we did it the next day. But I got, there was a silly art project thing. It's called Diamond. I think it's called Diamond Painting. Basically, it's little, I don't know, probably plastic gems that are color coordinated and kind of like a paint by numbers. But you put them in this grid, and there's adhesive at the bottom and all this stuff. And I saw it, and I was like, well, I think Jen might like that for Valentine's Day, because, you know, it's a busy little art project that she could do that isn't going to be, oh, I've got to get out the watercolors and I've got to get everything prepped, and that, you know, it's just something, hey, I can go over and I can throw in a few, I got 5 minutes to spare, and I can, you know, make this cool picture. So that's what I got. Don't know if it's been opened yet, but
I should say real quick, by the way, because we talked about him, Ian Hubert does have a Patreon now.
Oh, nice.
And Ian is fucking awesome. We have worked with him we've tangentially worked with him in the past on special effects and things like that. He's done for projects we've worked on. But I would highly recommend his Patreon. The entry level is $3 a month. So you start getting cool stuff at $3 a month. And it's just patreon.com/IanHubert, IanHubert. But you'll get early access to his videos and things like that. I just wanted to bring it up because we like to inform people about cool people, and he's a cool people.
Yes. Yes, he is.
Sweet. Well, that about wraps it up for me.
Yeah.
How about you? Yeah, cool.
I don't have much. Hopefully I will be in better health to do the casts. Oh, I can say one thing that's coming up. Because it wasn't, and I was really bummed. And then yesterday I found out it was, and today I made my payments, and I just got the emails that said it's good. I'm going to be... Well, I hope. I think I can get through all the classes. I will be a rescue diver by the beginning of... Well, just after the 1st of April.
That's so cool.
So I've got my emergency first responder class on the 30th of this month, and then I have a date night with Jen that I put on the calendar a long time ago because she wanted to go see a concert and thought that I'd forgotten about it, so I let her feel that. And then I went and got front row tickets at the Triple Door for... Oh, what the hell? She doesn't listen to the podcast anymore. Well, I'm not going to say it just in case she does. Might surprise
me. Tell me after we're done, because I am curious.
Cool. And so then I've got Saturday and Sunday rescue diver. And then I believe I picked up the specialty course of, I think, oxygen provider. Cool. So I will have a lot of first responder diver type stuff under my belt, which gets me one step closer. Well, in fact, the next step after this is dive master. So,
That's awesome. By the way, there is a diving launch right by my house. If you're ever interested in coming out, there's a shallow, sort of right off of our street. If you head north instead of south to get, off of, Harper Hill, there's a small inlet with a fishing pier that goes out of one of those metal fishing piers, and a lot of people dive there. So
might
be something fun to do. Yeah. Cool, man. Well, without any further ado, as always, we do a bit of ado before we don't do what we're doing anymore. Huge thanks to our Patreon patrons, Hawk Robinson,
James Peters,
Leslie Sedlak,
Rob McLennan,
Stuart Hume,
Zombie Orpheus Entertainment,
Gordon D. Duke,
Dennis Nickel,
Jay Blanket,
Casey Lee,
Dougie Sharp,
Laura Red Scott,
Seth M. Davis,
Todd McKimmy,
Lotta Jer,
Tom Brophy,
Laura Adams,
James Herbert,
Bo Pritchard,
Tim Martin,
Brad Roberts,
Jennifer Reifenberry,
and Rival Guy. Thanks all of you to our patrons, and I guess keep the faith and keep buying that Valentine's Day candy. Someone's got to keep it alive.